The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
We're two rounds into the home and away season for 2019 and five teams are 0-2. And we all know the numbers that don't equate for final success for teams 0-2. But can any of those teams buck the trend? That topic, as well as plenty more, is on the agenda today in the Fox Footy Podcast, where we'll be joined a little bit later on by Triple Premiership line Alistair Lynch, where things are looking very good for Queensland footy at the moment. Ben Waterworth alongside the regular crew that it has assembled for this week's episode. Firstly, let's welcome the WrestleMania-bound Max Lawton. Hello, Maxie.
Reasonably big week for me.
Yes. Benny,
leading up to it. We've got a nice little flight over there and then a few days in New York.
What a dream. We'll talk about that in a tick, but also let's welcome foxsports.com.au's chief early 2000s WWE correspondent, Tom Morris.
Yeah, I did like the Hardy Brothers and Rikishi and William Regal when I watched SmackDown in about 2002.
Yes, perfect.
I didn't, but everyone's got a window for their sporting loves, and your real sporting loves endure the test of time. WWE was very much a 4 or 5 year window for me before I realised there was other things to do on Saturday nights.
But thank you for suggesting it could be a sporting love.
No, it's a sport. It's competitive. It's organised and it requires physical exertion. That's a sport.
So you're heading to WrestleMania. You've been to WrestleMania before as a fan, but this time you're going in a working capacity.
Nice little junket over there.
Yes. Yeah,
not too bad. I have a blog on the Fox Sports website on Monday morning for all those invested, unlike Tom. It'll be very exciting.
I'll be on the blog.
Great. Ronda Rousey's in the main event. She's a real fighter.
She is, but now she's being a fake fighter. What's going on there?
Yeah, but they're doing a storyline where she's a real fighter while being a fake fighter. It's all very confusing.
Is it actually a trampoline, the WWE?
No. So the canvas, it's harder than you think. It's a very, very secure surface. And in fact, I watched a video during the week. It's at the Jets and Giants NFL Stadium, WrestleMania.
Yes.
And it's going to be probably in the single-digit temperatures at night, possibly even raining or snowing in New York. So they've actually heated the ring. So that no matter what happened, the wrestlers are going to be fine. It's just the audience is going to be a bit cold.
So what's the wrestle match called when they got to reach for something?
Yep. A ladder match?
A ladder match, and they got to reach for
that's always a good fun.
And they can't get up, and then the ladder falls, and then they get a steel chair and a table and the whole lot.
The good thing about that is that then you imitate it in smaller wrestling companies. So I went to a promotion in Thornbury.
In Thornbury?
A few weekends. And then the Thornbury Theatre, Melbourne City Wrestling, putting on some great shows, and they had a ladder match, and it's still a long way to fall when you're at the top of one of those.
It's a big effort,
Ben,
Tom.
Wow.
It's a different world. We can be quite nostalgic.
Fake. It's fake.
Oh, but it's predetermined.
It's great sports entertainment, Tom.
No, it's good.
Speaking of great sports entertainment, we've had some great entertainment in the AFL over the first couple of weeks. Yes. It hasn't been great for tipsters, though. The nightmare was, I suppose, reached its peak on Sunday when we had all of those upsets. But firstly, I suppose, we did it's only round one but last week, but it's only round two. But we need a big call, Thomas. It's only round two, but
Brisbane can and will play finals.
So you stole mine.
Did I actually?
Yes, you did.
We should have spoken beforehand.
Well, let's speak about the Lions.
Let's flesh it out then.
But because they had an excellent win over the reigning premiers in round one, and then when they were challenged against a North Melbourne side that was clearly always going to be better than what they dished up in round one, they actually produced, when the game was up for grabs, a couple of star standouts in Lachie Neale and Charlie Cameron. But this list on paper, this team on paper, I think David King said, they're not coming. They've arrived.
Yeah, I get that. Look, if the season was 17 rounds long, I think they would probably miss out on finals.
Right.
But because they have this easy fixture based on last year's results, that's going to just tip them in slightly.
Right.
Now, I think I agree with David King. They're here. They're ready to go. But they're going to be advantaged, just as teams have been in previous years, by where they finished last year.
So when you said the 17 rounds, I thought you were about to say that it was going to favour Brisbane because of how young this list is in terms of legs and miles in
maybe
the legs.
A little bit,
but you're thinking from the fixture perspective.
I think the fixture would outweigh the length of the season, would outweigh the fatigue based on the length of the season.
Now, I'm a little bit shy on this one because I did say last week that Fremantle was going to make the finals and then they went and lost to Gold Coast. So let's just ignore that prediction. But I had Brisbane just getting in there. They seemed like a team that could be potentially making the finals this year. If you looked at their last season, they won 5 games, but they're a percentage of a team that won 8.
And they lost how many games by under 7 points? 5 games or something?
5 or so. So you turn those games around, and we'll talk to Lynchy about this a bit later, because that game on Sunday against the Roos was a game they would have lost last year, I'm sure of it.
Yep. Yeah, so many close losses last year.
And the other thing about Brisbane is do the maths. They need to win 10 of the next 20. You don't tell me, based on what you've seen over the past 4 weeks, including JLT, that this is not a team capable of winning one in two games for the rest of the year.
Oh, yeah. They look strong, and as you mentioned beforehand, their draw might open up for them a little bit more as well. So where do the Lions sit, Maxie, as we go into the power rankings after round two ahead of round three? Where do the Lions sit currently on the foxfooty.com.au power rankings?
So I believe they're still ninth. Not a huge amount of faith from the collective Fox Footy voters that they'll yet make the eight.
But are you separating yourself from the rest?
I mean, I had them higher, I think.
I've believed in them for some time. But I think it's fair enough to put them in that little area. What I've noticed is that if you look at the ladder, it's crazy. Five teams are 2-0. Three of them were teams that were in the bottom six last year.
Yes.
We don't necessarily think that St Kilda and Brisbane, the teams
Bulldogs,
like that, are definitely top four teams. Mm. That's clearly crazy. So there's a lot of weighing up of how much do you put into preseason predictions, how much do you put into what we've seen so far. You
have and how much is visceral as well.
Visceral.
It's a good word, wasn't it?
You love that.
It's true, though. How much you just feel as if a team is not very good or
you can tell sometimes
a team is good.
For example, Melbourne is sixth in the power rankings.
Yeah.
That surprised me because they have looked appalling, particularly on Saturday night against Geelong, losing by 80-some-odd points. Essendon, meanwhile, is 15th.
That's a mistake, the Melbourne.
I think it's probably a bit high, too.
Yeah. If anyone like me has watched Melbourne over the first 2 weeks, there's no way they're only losing to five other teams in the comp if they play this weekend.
But you have to look at it this way. People thought they were a flag fancy. I tipped them for the flag, certainly. I know others did. And you can still believe in that team to go well. Like, if you had to say which one of Melbourne or Essendon will make finals, I think most people would still say Melbourne.
I agree with that.
Because you have belief in the system, you have belief in what you've read about the list, and you have belief that they will overcome their problems, which seem to be fitness-based, more than Essendon's, which seem to be more systemic.
So Jared and Robbo discussed who's in a worse position after round two at the moment, the Demons or the Bombers. Judging by their power rankings, clearly the Bombers are in a worse position in that sense, and I think that's maybe because of the runs on the board that the Demons had and put on last year, whereas the Bombers, you know, are finding themselves in a very similar position in terms of a trend to what they were this time last year, where by round eight, it was too late. Their season was gone and they clicked into gear late. Do you fear, Tom, that this could be happening with the Bombers? Because a lot of the commentary is John Worsfold needs to get it right this week, otherwise it's going to be too late.
Yeah, I don't think Essendon's capable of playing finals from Norton 3. I think many people thought that based on the second half of last year, Essendon would be okay this year. If not good, I think top four was a reasonable estimation. If not, then top six. It hasn't transpired that way. But not only have they lost, but they've lost in really disappointing fashion. In round one, they were terrible. In round two, they started terribly, which is inexcusable given how bad they were the week before. Mm. You would have thought they'd come out breathing fire. In fact, all the noise was, we're going to be fired up. We're going to rebound. It just didn't eventuate. I am worried about the Dons because when you look at their best team on paper, you think they should be good and they're not, meaning something else is falling down.
Yeah, you look at what John Worsfold said at the start of the game. He was talking on Fox Footy's coverage pre-game and saying that he was certain that they were going to come out on fire.
Well, with the Bombers, there's a lot of talk. Things aren't going right on the field, but there's lots of whispers around at the moment about some disharmony off the field. Is there something in that as well? There's talk this week that some of the senior players might be a little bit nervy ahead of selection for round three. Yeah. Have they made some selection errors, or is there something happening off the field that we just don't know about?
Not that I know of. I mean, there's always rumours about clubs that aren't performing well. Yeah. Always. That's a constant in the game. If your team is underperforming, then there are suggestions that people are unhappy off the field. I don't think anyone is willing to criticise John Worsfold's man management and his ability to bring a group together, just as he did when he came into the club. That was really, really good what he did there. But I think the question marks over John Worsfold are tactical and strategical and whether he can actually get the best out of a group in the modern game against other teams that are really polished and high quality and well-drilled.
We had things like Dyson Heppel starting on a wing against St Kilda. And Dylan Shield starting on
the bench. Yes.
I know we have rotations and that's very important. But not only is Dylan Shield a high price recruit, he's probably your most well-rounded midfielder. He combines the best of Heppel and Merritt, and he has to start in the middle. And when he doesn't, you think, well, what's going on here? Who's making this call? Even if it's for the first 3 or 4 minutes, which are pretty important minutes in a game if you get two goals down.
I'm not as worried about the Demons. I think things can click for the D's.
I'm worried about the D's because nothing seems to be working. Their forward line is dysfunctional. Their midfield, aside from Clayton Oliver, looks slow. And their back line is just low on quality without Lever, and now Steve May is injured as well. I know they're underdone, but there's only so many games you can give up in the first 8 to 10 weeks of the season before it really affects you in the back half.
You know what? You know what's flabbergasting, though, is that this talk and some the numbers that I saw last night about what the D's are like without Jesse Hogan at the moment. Didn't they just push themselves to a preliminary final in the back half of last season without Jesse Hogan in the forward line?
That's not the issue.
What's the issue then?
It has to be the movement towards the forward line.
Yes, I agree with that.
Because Sam Wiedemann was kicking 2 goals a game in the finals, and that's what Jesse Hogan did for his career, about 2 goals a game.
They really miss Joel Smith and Mitch Hannon more than what we ever
knew. They're real bottom six players, but you're right.
No, that connection, that conduit between mid and forward is so important, and they just don't have it at the moment. I think if the D's get to 4-4, I think they probably should win at least 2 of the next 3 with Sydney, St Kilda and Essendon over the next 3 weeks. They should win at least 2 of them. If they can get themselves to 4-4, then they should be okay. But really, this is a list that should be finishing top 4, not bottom 4 of the 8.
Which is what they'd probably relinquish at this point, because, you know, if you lose 2 consecutive games at any point in the season, it's bad. But if you do it at the start and you put yourself in a hole, it's just more difficult to get out of. And realistically, it's going to be harder for them to finish top 4 and therefore harder to make the grand final in a season we thought that they could.
Also, Geelong are very good.
Oh, yeah.
What do you not do against Geelong? Bomb it high and let their defenders read the ball. And that's exactly what Melbourne did time and time again with no system. And I was at the Richmond-Collingwood game, and Richmond did exactly the same. They bombed the ball high, and Collingwood's Langdon and Darcy Moore and their other running defenders just mopped up. Yep. The game is, I think, the game is more intricate than that now. You have to lower your eyes and actually hit leads and hit targets and work the ball by hand. Bombing it high might work for Buddy and Ben Brown and maybe one or two others in the league, but it doesn't work for Melbourne at the moment, and they needed to change and they didn't.
Or at the very least have a plan B, because that was their plan A all of last year as well, and they had games like the one against Port Adelaide where they dominated the inside 50 count and didn't score enough.
So Collingwood was super impressive tactically with how they were able to pick apart Richmond.
Yes.
Has that been reflected in the power rankings? Are they at the top there?
They are right at the top alongside West Coast.
Ah,
so
yes.
The grand finalists carrying on their form. And Geelong third, despite the fact that Geelong has beaten Collingwood.
Mm.
Would you guys agree with me that it feels like there's a top 3 right now, and it's those 3 teams?
Round 2, yes. But also, Geelong wasn't terribly convincing against Collingwood in round 1. A lot of round 1 was that Collingwood was probably more disappointing than Geelong impressive. But that was flipped in round 2.
I defer to David King, who says that Geelong now has a brand, has a real style that they play with, which I think is a real positive. And I noticed that in round 1. And Chris Scott was coy on it, but Gary Ablett was very open about it when he was interviewed on 3AW Radio. Yeah. And then in round 2, it became even more obvious.
Yeah, Chris Scott's thing has been taking advantage of being able to nullify the opposition's strength for some time now. Now, if Geelong's going to have a strength itself, it won't have those issues where games where it just can't score because it can't figure out what to do.
Any other surprises from the power rankings that you noticed?
So North Melbourne down in 16th, below Essendon, probably the most disappointing team based on those rankings.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you more disappointed by, the Bombers or the Kangaroos this year?
No, I've got the Bombers below the Kangaroos. If they were going to play this week, I would tip North Melbourne, not Essendon.
So, and Brad Scott talked a lot about centre bounce clearances
on
AFL 360 last night, because the Roos are dead last. And over the last 2 games, they've had one of the worst conceding scores from centre bounce clearance numbers that we've seen in Champion Data's records. GWS in sort of 2012, 2014, the only team that's had it worse. So they've really struggled. And Brad Scott credited that a little bit to the new rules, where teams are just going on runs of clearances and kicking goals and making up big leads. We saw that twice on Sunday against North Melbourne and then against Hawthorn with the Bulldogs in Brisbane. So you can have these runs of play that really blow open a game, and the Roos have struggled in that. Goldstein probably not playing super well so far this season. It's an issue for them.
I think centre clearances, again, this is Jared Healy's perspective, that It's not random, but it's more random than what people think.
Yes.
So the ruckman matters. If you've got Nick Natanui or Aaron Sanderlands in there, you've got a big advantage. But other than that, it's just about getting the best players in there as often as possible. And if you do that, you mitigate the randomness of what goes on. But it's not an exact science. And I think sometimes you can easily lose 5 or 6 in a row, then win 5 or 6 in a row, and you've done nothing but just play the game.
Mm.
I think centre bounce clearances are probably one of the most random parts of the game, more than just stoppages around the ground.
But I think Dane Zorko said pre-season to foxfooty.com.au that centre bounces could be the difference, a minute difference between winning and losing games this season, and maybe that certainly played a big factor in his side's win over North Melbourne on the weekend. Maxie, as we are starting to do every week here on the Fox Footy podcast, we're going through Maxie's mailbag and digging out some of the best interactions from our fans.
Russell, pull out the envelopes. Russell.
Reminds me of Sam Newman with Sam's mailbag, Max.
I wouldn't know. I'd say I'm a big fan of his content. Let's start at the top of the power rankings with West Coast and Collingwood. And we have a really good lineup of games in round three.
Oh, fantastic.
A lot of really close games. One of them, Saturday night, Eagles v Pies at the MCG grand final rematch. Julia writes, the winner against GWS was epic by our boys yesterday. This is, of course, an Eagles fan. But in saying that, if the Eagles run over Collingwood next week at the MCG, would you be comfortable saying they are the benchmark team to beat this season?
Yes. Absolutely.
Thanks, Julia. Great debate.
Yeah, no, but clearly because, but I think any win over at the MCG, particularly over a side like Collingwood that plays there essentially two out of every 3 weeks, is a big tick.
Can I have a little small asterisk?
Absolutely.
If Geelong thrash Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval on Thursday night, then I would place West Coast and Geelong on par as the teams to beat.
Yeah, I would still put West Coast. I think West Coast win over the Giants on Saturday was, I reckon, above what Collingwood produced over the Tigers on Thursday night. They dismantled the Giants and the midfield in particular. Dom Sheed has clearly improved from last year.
Yeah.
Luke Shuey's taken his game to another level. Despite the Giants, you know, having 62 inside 50s to 47, that back line stood up superbly. McGovern, Barras.
What about if Geelong beat Adelaide?
No, it depends on the margin and the style.
Yeah.
But if they won by a similar-ish margin, I would still have the Eagles above the Cats.
I would too, but Geelong has had issues at the Adelaide Oval, particularly against the Crows.
That's part of my reason.
They've lost three in a row there, so that would be a good win. Sort of Sydney and the dog style having a bit of an issue with the team. But yeah, the Eagles win might be one of those games where when you have Saturday night, you have the two games. That's the one on 5:03.
Oh, yes.
Especially the Victorian meter. We're all watching Geelong Melbourne. No one's watching West Coast. They're just thumping a really good team. West Coast. You were, of course.
Eagles are great. Yeah, very loyal.
What's next in Max's mailbag?
Let's have a look. So there's a lot of questions about umpiring, which...
Yeah. Well, we need to address it then, because it is has clearly been a big talking
ask the best
point.
Of them.
A lot of them probably not fit for broadcast. Generally, it was about the James Sicily decision and things in the Hawthorn Bulldogs game, and a lot of this is about the crackdown on punching. So what are our thoughts on this? We also saw on Airflow 360... one from the Port Adelaide game, which really caught a lot of attention.
Scott Lysette was in a boundary throwing ruck contest with Andrew Phillips and just minutely nudged Phillips under the ball and was called for a free kick. Ken Hinckley admitted last night that he saw the free umpire blow the whistle. He thought it was for a downfield free kick in the forward line because he was watching Lysette at the time and thought he did absolutely nothing wrong. That was far too far, and that's a standard that surely we can't keep for the rest of the season.
Did the AFL approve that decision, though?
I'm not sure on that specific decision, but they have approved the James Sicily decision.
Yeah, and I think the Sicily call was unbelievably soft, but now they've approved it, we know. So no player should ever make that mistake again.
And if that's the precedent that the AFL sets, coaches are going to be saying to their players, guys, don't do this, because once you give away free kicks and then it leads to scores, like the Sicily one did, that immediately make sure that those things kind of things won't be happening.
There's a lot of complaints about free kicks in that game for two clubs that have done rather well at free kicks over the run of
the top kicks. Comment on our Facebook post afterwards was free kick Bulldogs.
Oh,
probably from a Hawthorn fan.
I would imagine so.
Yeah, seriously. Death, taxes and debate over rules and interpretations after round two of an AFL season. Right.
My two big takeaways I want to have from the round. One of them is that free kick counts do not have to be equal. There is no law in the bylaws of Australian football that says both teams must receive the same amount of free kicks.
And you've been big on that with the whole noise of affirmation analysis.
It's not bias. It's just how certain things are.
Yep.
Second one's about the AFLW crowds, actually.
Oh.
Did you guys know that tickets were free? Hey, guys, you know tickets were free? Hey, guys, you know it was free entry? Yeah, and they still got 53,000 there. There were a bunch of people
who were expecting 25,000.
There were a bunch of people who seemed to suggest, oh, yeah, but if you'd played Adelaide Carlton, the men's teams there for free, you might have gotten that. Yeah, in Adelaide, but if you put, say, Brisbane Fremantle at the MCG, you wouldn't get 50,000, would you?
Imagine how many people would have been at the Adelaide Oval had they not been sitting at home watching the Shield final at the same time.
That's true.
It would have been absolutely packed to the rafters.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's next on Max's mailbag?
I was going to say, though, if anyone attended the game, I'd like to know what the services were like. So, you know, food and drink availability around. Because if the Adelaide Oval was potentially thinking 25,000 would rock up, I'd like to know if, you know, facilities were a little understaffed on the weekend. So if you were there, let us know. Tweet at FoxFooty.
We're covering the important issues.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you get your hot dog on time?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's very important
to me. How long were you in line for?
Yeah. I'll let you know how the WrestleMania concessions
are. Thank you.
Let's have a look at St Kilda. So a lot of the attention was, of course, about Essendon losing because of the dramatic way in which it happened and all of that stuff. But Luke asks, after all of the off-field adversity faced by the Saints during preseason and the loss of Carlisle and Robertson, why is the story from the game on the weekend still the Bombers? Saints have shown great fight under trying circumstances.
I'll tell you why the story is the Bombers, because people click on the Bombers being bad, not the Saints being quite good. And that is the same for all teams, not just St Kilda or Carlton or North Melbourne or even beyond AFL. If there's a really strong negative angle, that will always trump the slightly positive feel-good story for the other team. That is just the way news media works these days. It's a shame, but it's the reality.
It's the way it always has. If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah.
This is a very sounding board sort of topic, but really, that's how it works. We see what people are interested in. If you complain about a story that's going up and getting a lot of coverage, probably because a lot of people are reading them.
I'd almost say, though, that a positive Essendon angle would almost outdo a negative St Kilda angle.
Disagree.
No, I would say, just from judging on that, because there's just something about this Bombers supporter base that when things are up and going, they will crave on anything that is glass half full.
Yeah, I agree. But I also think St Kilda being bad just gets the juices flowing of all other fans and supporters and clubs.
Really?
Because yeah, I think it does. Don't you think?
I feel like when St Kilda's bad, they sort of just get forgotten a little bit.
Yeah, but I think they become a laughing stock as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Based on previous years. They're not that this year at the moment.
Certainly. Let's actually chat positively about the Saints.
Yes, let's do it.
Because it was a good win, and it was surprising because I think a lot of people wrote them off, including me, after they only beat the Suns by a point in round one. But they looked good, and Jade Gresham playing in the midfield is very impressive.
The keys there are Gresham and Billings, who I think are arguably two of their most talented players. I think Nick Riewoldt said that Gresham is now actually St Kilda's best player. It's hard to argue with that. When he gets going, his talent is clearly, I think, better than any other St Kilda player. And now he's starting to accumulate more of the ball as well as keep on hitting the scoreboard. He's a dangerous proposition for opposition clubs.
Yeah, he's impressive, Gresham. The challenge will come when he gets more intention as well. Mm. But again, these players that are nippy and skillful so valuable, something that Melbourne at the moment doesn't particularly have, but the Saints with Billings and Gresham and a couple of others have managed to find. I'm still holding fire on St Kilda, though. I think they very easily, could have beaten teams Essendon and Gold Coast 16-17 or 17-18 at the end of the year. So I'm just waiting to see if they can beat a team that I think is going to be mid-table.
It felt like they won by a lot more than 11 points.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, they were 5-6 goal better side than Essendon on the
weekend.
But
it's positive. And in 2014, they also started with two wins and they finished last. So
yes, it doesn't necessarily mean a lot.
Yes, they're good, but we need to hold fire as well.
One more from the mailbag there, Maxi.
Don't let anyone say that we don't cover the big issues here on the Fox Footy podcast. Yep. JT asks, thoughts on the new West Coast song?
Yeah, I heard that. Justin Timberlake.
From Survivor.
I was watching the West. I was covering the West Coast game, and then it was about almost to log off for the night. And then they start this chant before the start of the game. And
yes,
quite weird because West Coast had given no one the heads up about this, and they start this chant that immediately reminded me of what North Melbourne do before
their song. To play.
And it was very hard to pick up the lyrics as it was going, but the next day the Eagles actually released a statement with the lyrics down there, and I actually really like it, because of all the West Coast songs, of all the AFL songs, probably equal with Fremantle, the two West Australian sides, it's arguably the most uninspiring West Coast, it's short.
Yes.
And that's what the West Coast players went to the marketing staff with over the off-season, say, we want to try and lengthen this, but also, you know, try and galvanise us a little bit more, because the lyrics of the current song aren't so galvanising.
But they're the Eagles. The West Coast Eagles.
I understand that, Max. But
and here's what they're here to do. Fly high.
I think it's a win. I think it'll catch on.
I don't think there's a coincidence that those are the two teams that I most associate, Fremantle and West Coast, with playing other songs after they win a game at their home ground.
I think Australians like to chant more than sing, and as a result, this will work.
I like that from you, Tom. Now we've been talking about the Lions a little bit earlier on, but also it's a great time for Queensland footy with the Gold Coast Suns, Tom, and we've got a very special guest.
Alistair Lynch joins us on the line, the Brisbane Lions champion. And he's also done some work with the Gold Coast Suns. He was at the Sydney-Adelaide game last Friday night as well. Lynchy, before we talk about the footy, where do we find you today and where are you on your way to?
Sounds like you're asking a question that you know the answer of. I've just pulled over in the car. I'm off to an over-50s cricket game. I'm playing for Queensland today against New South Wales. So Yeah, we kick off in about an hour and a half, so I'm a bit nervous at this stage.
Well, make sure you do your stretches before.
The main nerve is that I don't care a calf in the first over.
I cannot believe you're in over 50s, Lynchy, but yeah. Well played to you for looking as you do and being in that category.
Yeah, in a photo, I think I'm okay. Once I actually have to move or do anything else, I'm in all sorts of strife.
All right, well, we can save all that for a Fox Cricket podcast down the line. Good luck today. Make sure you bowl top of off. But let's talk about footy, and I want to start with your beloved Brisbane Lions. I'm sure you're watching them closely up in Queensland. They're in some pretty good form, a few people talking about them potentially playing finals. What is their upper limit? Where can they go to by the end of this season?
Well, their upper limit, they can play finals, and I think, as we've seen over the last couple of weeks, they'll go into every game believing truly that they can win and compete longer than they have in previous years. And we've seen that progression over the last couple of years. I think, you know, albeit they've won five games each of the last two seasons, they'll go in deeper into games last year. And I think with the development of some of their younger players, in particular those guys that have been there, you know, 3 and 4 years now, and I mean that's McCluggage, Berry. I mean, even at the top end, Harris Andrews is one of the elite defenders in the competition now. So those guys are actually jumping up to be very good league players. And I think that drags up everyone else. And I think the rebuild has been, it was first around player retention. Now to drag the likes of Lachie Neale to the club, it was Charlie Cameron last year, and certainly a bonus in Link McCarthy. I think the upper level is into the finals. I have them bracketed, and I must admit, I thought pre-season 8 to 11 wins was the mark. But with two very good wins at the start of the season, they can go two games further than that, which will push them into the finals.
Lynchy, how much stake do you put into them being 2-0? I mean, that must give a lot of belief to a young side, particularly when you look at the North game. They were behind, they had to come back. That was a game they would have lost last year, but they managed to get back over the top of the Roos. What did you see in that?
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I think when they were playing the Premiers in round one as well, they were 27 points down at quarter time. So typically you see young teams roll over and just get smashed in that situation, especially against the best in the competition. So I think what they've been doing to have that resilience gives them an enormous amount of confidence. Brisbane over the last decade have been awful at the start of the season. I think it doesn't matter who you support. You want to go into the season with hope. And if that hope is, you know, basically knocked on the head by round 3 or 4, that's the end of your year. And so often Brisbane have done that. So a 2-0 start gives almost franks a lot of the talk that's been around the place in the greater AFL community for the last 6 months. There's been a lot of hype around the club. And I think it also reinforces to the players that what the coach is saying is correct or is on the right track, and certainly so they get more confidence out of those first two wins. So it does an enormous amount. Now, that doesn't suggest they're going to win the comp or definitely play finals, but just reinforces they're on the right path to something that's going to be sustainable over the next few years.
We've seen lots of clubs rebuild lately, Lynchy. Carlton and Melbourne have tried their best, and Kilda is still trying to rebuild. Why has Brisbane appearing to get it right? What have they done differently to the other clubs to allow them to set this positive path in motion?
They probably haven't got it right on a few of occasions over the last 10 years. But I think when Chris Fagan came in, he was determined to not only just recruit in the right talent, but also get the right staff around him and empower them to be able to do their jobs and bring the group back together after a sustained period of being unsuccessful. There was a few fragments in the club that he had to pull back together, and I think he's done that. And he certainly wasn't after a quick fix at all. The fix was, and even Chris even said this, I think, publicly, but, I mean, if he was to get the flick after 3 or 4 years, he just wants the club to be set up in a position where it can go forward and grow on what he's put in place. But, you know, the reality is, well, not the reality, is the expectations now are we should see that in wins and losses. But very much it was a slow build, get the right pieces in place, get the right list build, for the future. And I think they're pretty close to that. I mean, as far as, you know, have they got the right people there on the field to be very good in this competition? And it's pretty close to that. I mean, there's probably a couple of pieces still missing, but I think Fagan being a people person, and the other really good thing was when they made the Chris Fagan appointment, they gave him David Noble as well, who has coached in his own right himself, has also run a football club in the Adelaide Crows. He's a good football person, so he's a sounding board for Fags. They can work together because they both understand the competition, both understand how what it's like to build a successful club. So I think that piece was important as well. He had support, had someone who was confident enough in what they do to tap him on the shoulder at times and say, mate, I reckon you're going down the right wrong path, or you're going down the correct path. So just to give him some confidence.
Now, Lynchy, I think this was one of the rare days on the weekend where both Queensland AFL sides won. And we saw you working with the Suns a little bit during the preseason, and they happen to have the Coleman Medal leader right now in Alex Sexton. How much of that goes to you, the credit for his success?
Well, I think I was fortunate enough that Fox Sports teed up for me to go and spend the day with the Gold Coast Suns. So I arrived at 8 o'clock in the morning, went through all their meetings, their training prep meetings, there's a match committee meeting, there's welfare meetings, and I was actually out on the track as the vision showed on the weekend's game. And they actually asked me to throw some balls up to the guys to practice their marking on the bags, and I slaughtered the first three, so I wasn't real good. And it was actually, I don't think they want me back because it was actually the day Rory Thompson did his ACL on the track, so the mood wasn't great. But just with that day down there, it reinforced me. I've got a couple of people that I respect highly in the AFL. I've always spoke highly of Stuart Dew and his credentials. And if we turn the clock back a few years, he was offered the job at Melbourne to follow on from Paul Roos originally, but he knocked it back. But just working with him for that day and seeing the staff that he's got around him, and now the incredible facilities they've got there on the Gold Coast, finally, I think they're looking really good. Now, it's going to be an extremely tough year for them. They've won one more game than I thought they would. I didn't think they'd win a game. You know, especially, which is probably not, and that's not from being in the club and thinking, oh, these guys are hopeless.
Yeah.
When I actually was in the club there for the day, they were super impressive. Mm. And they're doing all the right things. You just think, well, maybe their list's a bit thin. But to bring in guys like Sam Collins and even Burgess in the forward line to just compete helps the young guys come through. So, I mean, as we're talking about with the Brisbane Lions, for them to get a win over Freo that smashed North Melbourne in round one, I think it's great for their confidence. Now, they mightn't win too many more games, but they're going to be competitive at different stages through this season, and hopefully they do win some games. And the thing I'd do with Stuart Dew, because he's out of contract at the end of 2020, I'd get halfway through this season, and regardless of how they're going, I'd re-sign him and extend him for another year or two, just to make sure that he's not panicking about his job, because I think he's the right person for the job. But long as he is doing the things that are going to be good for the future, and you don't want a young coach to get to a stage where now he's starting to think, I desperately need wins to save my job. I think, and I don't think he's that sort of person anyway, but I think I'd be re-signing him June or July this year, regardless of how they're going with their win-loss ratio.
To play devil's advocate to that, what happens if the Gold Coast Suns decide that he's not the right person to go forward and they've re-signed him for a couple of years? They've already spent a fair bit on a soft cap. How can they then sack him if they actually can't afford him? Is that a consideration at all, or would you just completely back him to the hilt?
Absolutely. That's a consideration. But I'd be using this 6 months. They've seen him for 12 months under enormous amount of duress last year when they didn't even have their home ground for the first 10 rounds.
Yeah.
So he's gone through that phase. But I would assess him over the first half of this season. And yeah, you have your KPIs, how you measure whether a coach is doing the right things around building something that's going to be good and successful for the future. Now, if he ticks those boxes, that is an if he ticks those boxes, which I think he would, then I'd commit to him. And it might be just that you extend him for a year so he keeps going down the pathway that they're doing at the moment. Because you don't want him to recruit some quick fixes or get the wrong characters into the club just to save his job next year. But I understand what you're saying, but that's why I wouldn't do it now. I'd, again, assess him over the next 12 weeks. And if he ticks the boxes, which I'm sure he would, I'd re-sign him.
Lynchy, we love chatting to you, and good luck for the over-50s cricket game today. Just one tip from me, please leave the sandpaper in your car. Thanks very much for joining us.
Right, no worries. Thanks, fellas.
That's Alistair Lynch, and a superstar of the Brisbane Lions, and also some very interesting comments on the Gold Coast Suns.
Now, Tom, it's time for Australia's favourite segment, Fair or Farce.
I thought we were doing the mailbag again. Tom has some questions, statements, fair or farce. Yeah.
Oh, my God. See, the windows break. Max, I'll go to you first.
I'll do my falsetto next time.
Max.
Hi.
Fair or farce. James Heard will never be a senior coach again.
I think that's probably fair because I just, in the media climate of 2019, it is hard to see a club willing to cop that much flack and attention for a decision when there are probably a lot of other options out there.
That's exactly it. Is it worth the risk versus reward?
It's not about how good of a coach he could be. Brendan Goddard was pretty strong on AFL Tonight Monday, saying that he could have been a great coach.
No qualms.
No, he said. No qualms.
Was on the verge of being a great coach.
Yeah. And so I'm sure he could be a good coach, even if the Bombers did fall off in his last sort of few months at the club. But it's, you're taking on too much baggage if you pick him up at this point.
Yep, and I'm not sure whether he's willing to be an assistant coach and do all the coding and the long hours, which they get paid well, but it's a tough job being an assistant coach. I guess it's... you don't have as much pressure on you either. Ben, fair or farce? Melbourne is missing Jesse Hogan more than any other club is missing any other player.
No, that's a farce. So as I mentioned beforehand, the Demons were quite capable of going through to a preliminary final without Jesse Hogan in there. And as Max mentioned, I'll defer to him as well, it's the connection in the forward 50 at the moment. So Angus Brayshaw had 33 disposals on the weekend. Were they damaging? Probably not. Clayton Oliver had 44. Great super coach points. But did he really do any damage? Probably not. I think it's their disposal choice and how they use the ball, which needs to be fixed.
I think Clayton Oliver was good.
I think he was great, yes. Yeah. But did he actually do any damage? Not really.
It's hard, but yeah. It's hard
when the margin's 80 points.
Yeah. Max, fair or farce? Richmond has lost its mojo and cannot win the flag now.
Oh, I'm not writing off any team except maybe Gold Coast and Carlton after two rounds.
So that's a farce.
It's a farce. Okay. It's because I hate Carlton, by the way. That's why I've written.
Oh, wow.
Everyone knows that. So Richmond can still win the flag. We cannot write off a team with injuries when we just saw West Coast win it last year when they lost Ngatanui and Gaff through suspension. Shepherd. We know that teams can do this and come back, especially when you lose a player like Rance in round one when you've got a whole season to work out what you're doing instead of him.
Ben,
yes.
Eddie McGuire made an innocent mistake and everyone should move on now. Fair or farce?
This is a really interesting talking point because most of the social feedback... So I'll say fair. So I think that there has been a slight overreaction because I think you've got to understand what the timing. Eddie was in the studio. Having said that, I think, though, that that's a comment nonetheless probably shouldn't be on air. And I think Eddie's shattered. You could hear it when he spoke on Triple M. You could just hear it in his voice when he released that statement on Saturday as well. But a lot of the feedback is that we've probably went a step too far. And my understanding is that I think Cynthia... the number one Sydney Swans ticket holder is pretty keen for this to go away. I think she's seen how remorseful Eddie is and is keen to move on as well. And I think, therefore, the Swans are pretty keen to move on.
We live in a society where we are outraged.
Yeah.
So people, my reckoning was, people either thought this is disgraceful, he should never be on TV again, this is a symptom of shocking commentary and terrible TV analysis now.
Which I can understand because it's happened in the past.
Yeah, or people thought political correctness gone mad, this is nothing, Cynthia should harden up or the Swans should harden up. And in reality, the correct answer, I think, and I think you've just articulated well, is somewhere in the middle, probably slightly more negatively towards Eddie, but... We just urge balance in these situations, and you don't get a lot of it on social media or in the public sphere.
That's weird to hear from you, Tom, the ultimate centrist.
Yes.
and full credit to Eddie because he apologised at halftime, very quickly apologised. Yeah, he apologised three times.
Maybe he could have been stronger, but he has done well. I think the issue is the track record of these incidents, and I'm sure the people who were unhappy with it were also unhappy all those other times, and it's sort of built up.
Yeah.
So just you don't need to be making jokey comments about the coin toss, I guess.
Max, I don't care about the coin toss. I don't care if the coin's tossed 15 metres away.
So, also, did you guys know who that was before this incident happened?
No. And so that was one of the criticisms that the Swans on that occasion and clubs in general probably don't give us, the media or fans, the heads up of who's tossing the coin and why.
It'd be great to know. Yep. She's got a fantastic story and she's overcome incredible adversity.
That's right.
Max, fair or farce, 53,000 at the Adelaide Oval for AFLW proves next season should be longer than this season.
Well, I don't know that the two things are necessarily related.
Well, it shows the interest is there from an attendance perspective, and as a result, we should have more games because there's more teams rather than conferences.
I'll say fair, although on a game-by-game basis, attendance was slightly down.
Yeah.
I believe it was up because there were more games because there were more teams. I just agree that there should be more games in the season because it's fair for competitiveness and for the competition as a whole.
Oh, what do you think about Hutchie's suggestion?
I saw that last night.
So it runs at the end of the season, so July through to September. So, which is, I think, what the NRL do at the moment, but it's a shorter competition, only goes 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, I like it, but there's one issue in my mind with that, and I noticed it last year in the AFLW more than this year, which was a very dry AFLW season.
Yep.
The rain and the mud for the women's football, I think, impacts it more than it does for the men.
Good call.
And I don't think the spectacle or the talent across the board is enough to deal with that. Now, I like the idea in principle, but I'll just hold fire for a couple of years.
Like that, Tom?
And also when you've got things like teams missing out on percentage, if you have one or two of your games, GWS has a lot of games where it's rainy and stuff like that. That affects them more than other teams and actually could cost you a final spot because you just played rainy games.
Yeah, I'd like that down the track, but at the moment, not quite. My personal opinion is they've expanded too quickly. I would have kept it at 8 teams for 2 years.
Preach it, brother.
Maybe even 3 years. And just say, no, sorry St Kilda, sorry Hawthorn, you'll get your teams eventually, but right now we need to solidify this competition and not spread the talent too thin. They've made a mistake this year by doing it, and then the conference system by extension is an embarrassment as well.
100% Ben, agree.
Last one, fair or farce. John Worsfold and John Longmire are out of date tactically as coaches.
Ooh. No, I think that's a farce.
Sure that's a farce?
Yes, no, I'm not sure it's a farce, but I think that's a farce.
That's what matters.
Because I haven't done a full in-depth analysis of these two, but John Longmire has taken the Swans to how many final series consecutively since he took over from Paul Roos.
I'm just raising it. I'm not saying I agree with it.
Don't shoot the messenger. Yeah,
John Croc Media podcast.
Yeah, so I think John Longmire, definitely a farce, I think, on John Longmire. I still think maybe there's a little bit of a jury out, though, on John Worsfold.
I am a little concerned about the Swans, the manner in which they're going about it. There are players who don't really look like they should be midfielders going through the midfield at times for them, and their ball movement have been an issue for some time. So I'm worried about the Swans overall. I mean, I had them missing the finals preseason. I still think they missed the finals, especially after this start. It amazed me to look at I know betting odds have a bit of a reputation about them, but they are a fair reflection of expectations. Mm. Sydney v Carlton, and they were both even, like $1.90 to win that game at the start of this week.
Quite unbelievable. So let's have a look at we'll quickly race through the round three tips and cups. What I might do is I might just quickly run through the games and then maybe just give us maybe we can see an upset happening across any of the games. So Adelaide and Geelong for the Ronnie Burns Cup, Melbourne and Essendon for the Mark Jamar Cup, Carlton and Sydney for the Jason Saddington Cup.
Yes.
The GWS Giants v Richmond for the time-honored Jacob Townsend Cup. Collingwood and West Coast for the Chad Morrison Cup. Brisbane Lions and Port Adelaide for the Fabian Francis Cup.
Ah, one of my favourites, yes. Fabian.
Fabian briefly played for the Brisbane Bears early 90s. Mm. Western Bulldogs and Gold Coast for the Jared Spindleshanks Grant Cup.
Oh, the real estate agent.
Hawthorn and North Melbourne for the Lance Pachoni Cup.
Yeah.
And Fremantle and St Kilda for the Brett Peake Cup. There are some incredible prizes
Ben,
up for grabs.
That's some amazing names. And you even discarded Chris Heffernan and Gary Moorcroft for Essendon Melbourne.
Yes, that's probably deserves Chris Heffernan, I reckon. Or Gary Moorcroft. He played that season at Melbourne, didn't he?
Gareth Moorcroft.
Can you see any of those games upset?
So the Sunday games seem pretty straightforward. Dogs Suns, Hawks Roos, Dockers Saints. I'd be surprised if any of the home teams lost those.
Okay.
I'm going to pick West Coast to beat Collingwood at the MCG.
Yes.
I believe in them. And I could see Brisbane getting over the top of Port as well. Port have looked pretty good, but Brisbane, I'm driving the Brisbane bandwagon.
I know you are. You've been going. I think Carlton can beat Sydney.
Carlton looked good against Port.
I think Carlton can beat Sydney.
I don't bat. The only problem is Buddy. Buddy could just turn it on.
He could.
Yes.
And it'd be great to see if Jacob Wiedering gets the job on there because he's much improved.
There is. I can't remember a more one-man team than the Sydney Swans with Buddy at the moment. Now, this is not discarding how talented Luke Parker and Josh Kennedy have been or how good Callum Mills could be if he finally is allowed to play in the midfield, or Isaac Keeney. They're all talented. But for me, Sydney Swans' fortunes rests almost entirely on Buddy's weary shoulders.
Quickly, Melbourne Essendon?
Yeah, I'm going for Melbourne. But yeah. I'm going for Collingwood over West Coast. I think they'll bounce back at the MCG.
Back from that win.
You were big on Geelong.
Sorry, yeah, they won, didn't they? Yeah. I think they'll bounce back from the grand final is what I was saying.
I understand.
And you were big on Geelong earlier in the podcast. Can they beat Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval?
They can. I'm not sure who I'm going to tip yet, though. Am I allowed to just hold fire for the moment?
Of course you can hold fire. The tips.
My gut says Adelaide because...
And you always tip with your gut, don't
you? I just don't think Adelaide lose two in a row at the Adelaide Oval.
You always tip with your gut except for the rebound effect.
Yes.
The rebound effect was very much a 2018 phenomenon.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. Yeah. Stop living in the past.
And it ended up being a guideline, not a scientific formula. So
I like that from you, Thomas. And we won't be looking in the past. We're looking in the future here, Maxie, because for the next couple of weeks, you'll be in the States for WrestleMania. So go well.
Who are we going to get on the podcast?
Ronda Rousey.
Saz Ollie?
I'll get her on.
We can get Saz, but maybe we can get Maxie with a live interview with Ronda Rousey.
Don't think she actually does.
Who's Ronda Rousey?
Come on, Thomas.
Exactly who Ronda Rousey is.
I'll get Seth Rollins.
How good was it to hear Alistair Lynch speak about his career? Over 50s. That would... I tell you what, there wouldn't be many quick singles, many diving catches by the keeper, or many bumpers. I reckon the bowlers would be just floating it up there, hoping it would swing.
And a lot of stand and deliver kind of stuff from the batsman as
well. Yeah, but plenty of warm down and stretching, I would have thought.
Sort of how you probably rolled the old Melburnians there, Thomas.
We did win the flag this year.
How did that happen again?
We beat old
That's
Scotch
all we have time for on the Fox Footy podcast. Keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.
Six over the bowler's head.